Welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about research here at Queen's. My name is KM on the FM, and I'm your host for this week's Grad Chat. A show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs and CFRC. So a big thank you to both of them. If you miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. And it's a great way to stay informed about all the exciting research our graduate students and postdocs are working on. And today, I would like to introduce you to Dr. Amoon Jamzad, who is a postdoctoral fellow working in the School of Computing with Dr. Parvin Mousavi. Welcome to Grad Chat, Amoon.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And you've got a lot going on research-wise, but before we dive into that, can you tell us a little bit about your journey so far and what attracted you to Queen's in the first place?
Oh, for sure. So I think my journey was truly multidisciplinary. I started my bachelor as an electrical engineer, so mostly into hardware and understanding of how electrons work. But then as I transitioned to more graduate studies, I wanted to have the applications on the medical side. So I started a master and PhD program on biomedical engineering. So it has two part to it. One was changing the application to more medical related and also move a little bit toward data analysis. And then after that, for my postdoc period, I decided to jump into the data analytic parts more advanced and then go with the AI, because that was the time that AI was the big thing, which still is. That's how my work transitioned from pure hardware and electronics to AI and analysis of healthcare data. And the reason that I joined Queen's is, as you know, when you put the multidisciplinary research and you look at it, it's not possible without the collaboration between different people in different disciplines. And what Queen's provide is this opportunity. It is a true interdisciplinary environment that each person is not individually running a research. I, as a computer scientist, am part of a bigger team, consists of pathologists, engineer, clinicians, surgeons, and we work together in a collaborative way and we can make a difference. So I think that's the most important part, that the environment that we have at Queen's, that that's very rare. And this level of collaboration, and it's not about the technology, it's not about equipment, it's about willing of people that they want to collaborate with each other and they agree to come out of their comfort zone and see what's out there.
Yeah, because there's a lot going on in all of these different places, and it takes, you know, the skills and expertise of all your collaborators to make the projects actually happen. So your research involves artificial intelligence and a little bit of computer-assisted intervention, or maybe a lot of computer-assisted intervention. Can you tell us a little bit about what opportunities AI does to open up into cancer research, and what challenges does it need to address?
Yeah, for sure. So in a nutshell, what I'm doing is sit at the intersection of like AI and artificial intelligence, and specifically cancer studies. So it has different application, the use of AI from understanding the cancer, from characterizing it to supporting decision making. But if I want to start from the artificial intelligence as a broader thing, it's all about decision making. So let's say you want to go to a meeting from home. So what you have to make a decision, how you want to go there. So there you need two things. You need information, and then you need to make a decision based on the previous knowledge that you're having. For example, in that example, you probably may check Google Map to see what's traffic. You probably check what are the possible routes and what are the distances. You check the weather application to see, okay, how's the weather? Should I go by foot if it's a close distance, or I should get a car? You may check your time. Am I late? can I go and get a coffee and then go there? So all of those things are data part of it. So you're using different sources of information. Then the decision comes. So how you make that decision based on your previous experience. You probably visited this part of town before, so you know how the traffic works based on the time, based on. So based on this initial knowledge, you can make the hopefully best decision that you can be there on time and prepared, right? So AI is exactly the same, because it is an artificial version of the intelligence, right? The information part is data, and the decision-making part is the model. So when we are talking about different modalities that AI can use, we are talking about that information. When we are talking about model and how we can train models and different property of the models, it is about that knowledge that based on previous information can make a new decision interpret. So in that scenario that I mentioned, the data seems to be very simple. You have different sources like traffic, time, and all of that. And then the decision is, when should I go? How should I go? So the worst case scenario is you arrive late, right? So hopefully you will not get any accidents. But when you bring it into the application of cancer, both of these parameters are changing. The data part getting lots and lot more complex. We have different sources of information when you're going to capture it to make a decision about a patient, especially a cancer patient. So you can have imaging information. We have different modalities that can take an image, that each image capture different property. We can have normal cameras, for example, for skin analysis, or we can have cameras that actually visualize magnetic property of the body, acoustical property of the body. So all of these are trying to add another layer of information for you. And each of them has different component and its own complexity. And this is, you are getting information from humans. So it is not always the same. There's lots of variability. It's not zero and one like computers. So there are lots of challenge on the data side. The model part is also very challenging because when you're supporting the decision making, let's say you want to implement it in the surgery room, that the surgeon going to use it to help them better understand where cancer is and remove it, then the stake is very high. You have to make a good decision. The model is not going to say, okay, the worst case scenario, the cancer remains. That's not acceptable, right? So it's not just about having a precise model. You have to make the model trustworthy. You have to make the model handle uncertainty. So I cannot go into the OR and say, okay, surgeon, this is my model. When it says cancer, it's cancer. When it says normal, it's normal. You listen to it. They will throw me out of the OR because it should provide a level of understanding, a level of interpretation. It's not just, this is my decision, why you are making this decision. Because the most important part in my line of work that we should all agree upon is that AI models are not making decisions. AI models are supporting the decisions that are going to be made by the clinician. So that's very important to recognize. So that's the all of the opportunities and all of the challenges I can imagine for the AI in cancer research. Like the applications, if I want to go into that route, would be different. So you can use AI essentially to better understand cancer. You can use it to use previous information to understand the characteristic of cancer, how it's generated, what's the source of it. Then you can use it for treatment. You can implement something in the OR that when they use it to extract cancer and remove cancer from the body, they can use it to provide them with better information. You can use it for cancer monitoring after the cancer is out. Was it a successful surgery? How was the surgery? Can we evaluate it? So in all of these different application, AI can provide a potential help for the surgeons. And the data part, like there are lots of different modalities that we are working with. One of the interesting ones that I'm going to talk about most about would be the mass spectrometry. Yeah, which is very interesting.
So what makes mass spectrometry so useful in cancer research, and where does AI become important? I think you've done a really great job of explaining, you know, some of the challenges and the ways that you can use AI, but where does AI and mass spectrometry kind of come together?
Sure. Mass spectrometry, I think it's a very exciting technology because in a nutshell, what it does is it provides you with the chemical fingerprint of the specimen. So the mass spec technology by itself is it's not a brand new technology. It was around for many, many decades, but it was sitting in the laboratories that you feed a specimen, you get the chemical kind of fingerprint, and you make a decision based on that. But recently, it was lots of like interesting work has been done to make the technology accessible through operating theaters, through the surgical units. So to explain that, I have to first talk about the cancer itself. So why it's interesting in cancer? The cancer, most of the time, when we want to look at the, when we want to decide if it's cancer or not cancer, let's go start with that. That's the responsibility of the pathologist. So the pathologist will put the tissue under the microscope, if we want to simplify it. I'm sorry. my pathologist tells that it's a super oversimplification of what they're doing. But they cut the tissue, put it under the microscope, look at the tissue, and look at the structure of the cells, and make a decision that if this cell looks like cancer or not. That would be very simplification of
course.
What mass spec is doing is what's happening with cancer is not just the morphological change. It's not changing the look of the tissue. It's also changing the chemistry of the tissue. So if you be able to measure that level of information on top of the like visuals, on top of the morphological changes, that would be a huge additional information that you can use and help you to have a more certain decisions on the cancer. But how you can bring it to the clinical platform? So what's happening in the OR is, for any cancer surgery, when they have to, like solid cancer we are talking about, they have to cut the cancer out of the body. So that's the procedure. They somehow plan it. They know where the cancer is. They aim for it. They go and cut around it and then bring it out. So what they're using most of the time is not a cold knife. They are using an electrical knife, which in reality, heating up the tissue. So rather than cutting, you can say it is burning the tissue. And byproduct of any burning would be a smoke. So, and that's why in all of the operating room, we have suctions on the knife that collect all of the smoke and bring it into the filter. So the clever idea here was, why we get rid of it if it's a byproduct of what we are burning? Why don't we analyze it? That was the aha moment for them. So they bring it, they set up a system that rather than connecting the tube to the filter, they connect it to the mass spectrometer. So they can analyze the smoke that is coming out of the body when they're cutting in real time, and then provide the mass spec. So that was the big thing, because now you have a sampling tool without adding lots of like equipment into the current procedure. That's one of the important things. If my engineering part of the brain want to be involved, is it's not about how you can get a better decision. It's about how practical it is. If I come up with a new device called Amun 101, let's say Amun 2007, if I come up with that device that it has a very strange procedure that you have to connect it very weirdly and get some information, although it may provide some information, it will not be practically usable. But what the mass spec in an intraoperative form offering is, the surgeon experience would not be any different. What they are doing is they're cutting the same way that they were cutting, but we are providing the additional information to them. And what AI comes into place is, it can understand and analyze and detect patterns within these signatures, these chemical signatures that may not be possible to see with naked eye, because the signal is very complex. You are looking at the distribution of thousands and tens of thousands of ions that exist in the tissue. We are not talking about the simple molecule. We are not talking about the single substance. We are talking about the biological tissue that can have different sources and have can different variety. So the AI can be very helpful, but the challenges are, well, the data is complex. It's a kind of real-time situation. So all of the things that we mentioned about AI should help with the trustworthiness, with covering uncertainty. All of those things apply here, but it is a new modality that may not be very convenient. There are lots of AI models out there that are dealing with images. So I know, like, ultrasound images are different from MRI images, but at the core of it, you are dealing with the two-dimensional information, right? So in that sense, the mass spec data is somehow very different. So come up with AI solutions that can handle that and the, again, noisiness of the data. Another thing is with training. So a classical example of AI model training is, you have AI model that differentiate between cats and dogs. So you feed it lots of cats and lots of dogs and say, learn, this is your experience. This is how cats look like, this is how dogs look like. And then now you get a new image and then said, okay, this is cat, this is dog. But assuming that scenario, if I train a model with cancer normal, now if you show it the image of an elephant, by design, you limit it that either it can say cat or dog. And both of them are, so it's doomed to say the wrong thing, right? So the same goes for the AI model in clinical. So if I train a model with cancer versus normal, then what happened if the surgeon cuts a muscle? What happened if the surgeon cuts skin? And we see that sometimes the signature of a skin, for example, is very similar to the signature of cancer, or closer at least to the signature of cancer compared to normal. So that become an issue and they get lots of false positives. So all of those challenges are things that I as an AI scientist try to address, try to handle, and try to kind of come up with a solution that can handle this and give the best kind of answer from the AI model that the clinician can use and make the good decisions. Now, part of the deal is building up the tools, the AI tools that can help, but part of it is making it, again, accessible. How we can implement it actually in the OR. How we can do that translation, which for mass spec will come to the product that we recently released. It's called Mass Vision, and it is actually doing that.
Very cool. So you've designed Mass Vision. Can you tell us what this platform is and how it grew out of your research? I think I have a sense of it, but what does it do? How does it address all of these issues that you've just discussed?
For sure. Yeah, Mass Vision is an open source platform, so it's totally free. It's interactive, so the users don't need to code at all. It's all of the AI functionalities, exploration functionalities, all available for the user with no computing knowledge, with no programming knowledge to be able to analyze their mass spec data. So if I want to go a little back, I told you about one sort of like mass spec technology that we are having, which is analyzing the smoke as it's come. If I want to like have an analogy for it, it would be like a super nose. So in surgery, surgeons, rather than just looking at the information that's coming from imaging, they can use a sense of smell. So now I can smell the cancer, see where it is. That's good, but it's a sampling tool. There's another form of mass spec that we call mass spec imaging. So rather than connect the mass spec to the end of the cautery tool, that when they cut, it provides you with information as the time goes, so real-time sensing. We are providing with the imaging setup that you put the tissue on a stage, and then you move the tissue like in a grid, and then you capture the signature, chemical signature of each pixel. So you can imagine that it would be similar to the photo that you're taking with your camera. It has three channels, red, green, blue. That's how the sensor in camera work, right? So, and then by combination of red color, green color, and blue color, you create all of the different variation of colors, and that's how you create a kind of colorful image on your phone. It is somehow to that, but imagine rather than three channels, now you have tens of thousands of channels. So this is a very important technology, because now, on top of all of the complexity that we had with the chemical dimensions, now we add the spatial dimension into it. It has its good side and bad side. The good side is now for each of the molecules, I see a spatial distribution, how it is go from one location. So it is very localized. And it's very good when you have a piece of tissue and you want to do an analysis and you want to compare it with, let's say, pathology as a gold standard, right? So now you can have a one-to-one local. But again, the complexity is the issue. So you have to be able to address that. And who is actually working with that data? So I'm a computer scientist in cancer research, so I work with that data. I try to find solutions. But in reality, the main people who are working with the mass spec imaging data are basic scientists, are molecular biologists. So how they are handling this massive, huge, complex data and then come to the conclusion? Because those are the main scientists. I can provide the tool, but those people are the one who have to use it and come to the clinical conclusion, come to the biological conclusion. I cannot do that. That's above my knowledge, right? So, and the gap that we understand and I understand, and that was one of the things that only can be there through the collaboration between different disciplines. So through this collaboration that we are having through different projects, I see that our biological collaborators are relying on somebody who knows how to code. Definitely, I was there to help. And whenever they come to me, I want to do this. Can you do this? For sure, it's possible. We can just change the code. We can. But although it's good to have this collective kind of collaboration, it should not be the way that remove the independent research. So what I understand is it's a barrier for them to do the research on the mass spec information independently. So We understand that gap, and then we try to resolve it. So we said, all of these wonderful tools that I'm having that I have to code to get what I want, what if I use a platform that bring all of these and put a button interface, like user interface to it, so they can use it interactively without any coding knowledge? And not only that, that will give us to implement now additional capability that was not available in the previous software, add AI to it, and all of these in a free platform. So that was the beginning of the origin, let's say, origin story of Mass Vision. And what's happening with Mass Vision is, well, you have this huge data. First, the first step with the data, and this is a kind of a important note for all of the people who are in the medical field and AI. The AI is a secondary thing. The first step is you have to understand your data. It is not cats and dog and like elephants and cars that everybody know. Medical data can be different, so you have to have a good understanding of the data. So everything starts with exploration of the data. What if I want to simplify my data, how it looks like. So Mass Vision provides you with lots of AI-based technologies that can you can use and an algorithm that you can use to simplify the data. You can have different visualization that give you the best contrast of the things that you're looking for. So rather than looking at 10,000 ion image at the same time, you can simplify it to a simple visualization that give you all of the important points. And that make it discovery much easier. Then you can create your data set, because another thing that's important for any AI research is having a clean data set. So how you can say, this is my spectrum and this is my pathology label. Most of the platforms that are free cannot provide you with the multimodal environment that you can bring all of these together. So it become very hard. And the data set creation for the normal project could take like around 2 months.
Wow.
You can do that with Mass Vision in less than a week. So it's a huge difference in timeline, because it is now very convenient. And then for sure, the AI part, after you have your data set, you can do statistical analysis, you can do all of the fancy AI things that you want to do. And at the end of the day, it will help you to get what you want as a biologist, not necessarily as a computer scientist. And to give you a kind of idea about how successful was it, we released it, I think it was the last March 2025.
Okay.
And so far, we get more than 2,200 downloads worldwide. So it seems that it's
your tool is traveling far. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. And and it shows that it was something that was needed. And now we could provide it to the community, and I'm happy that they're using it. And it's the beauty of it is it's the platform that we are using is called Slicer. So Slicer is a platform for medical imaging, but we use the same platform to develop our Mass Vision platform. So the good thing about it is modular. So based on the community, based on the new requests that we are getting now from a larger community, rather than receiving instruction from our own group that I need this, and that was the base of the software. Now we can get requests from the larger community and then improve. So it is the improvement, and we are releasing more updates as we move forward and adding more functionality to make it more accessible for people.
Oh, wow. That's very, very cool. So it's gone from your very local collaboration between scientists and researchers and clinicians here in Kingston to global, and then you're getting feedback from global partners and then able to update the tool both to support local needs, but then also your global partners. So you're getting kind of this feedback that of continuous improvement, it sounds like.
Exactly. Wow. Exactly. And the beauty of it is not just the software. It is the platform that bring all of the tools necessary. So and lots of the needs are not necessarily simple AI stuff. Although we started with that, now we are improving it, because you want to have the bare minimum to start with, and then you want to improve. But the modular capability gives us the lots of options. So we can add, let's say, previously we have lots of paper in advanced AI models to how to improve cancer detection. But all of those was useful for us, but the reality is it's going to sit in a digital library and get a digital dust. But how to make it practical and how to make people use it? I can provide application on how or instruction on how to download the code, how to run the code. But most of the time, people, when they see the instruction, oh, I have to code, I have to like install it. So let's not do that, right? But if you can put it into a platform that does it interactive for you, then that feeling, that barrier feeling, it may be a feeling, you know, it's using ChatGPT nowadays, making lots of things possible. Like you can say, okay, this code is not working, what should I change? Oh, this. So you can go still with having long emotional conversation with ChatGPT to make something work. But then this would, I said, the key theme is accessibility. So what I'm trying to do is make all of those wonderful research that we are doing also accessible for the end users. So as another aspect of the research that we are doing here.
Oh, this is very exciting, and I'm glad that it's going so well. Are there any final thoughts you'd like to leave us about what makes this kind of research that you're doing possible?
For sure. As I mentioned earlier, we are working with definitely high-tech tools and high-tech toys to get what we want. But I think the key part is that technology by itself is not enough. You need people, and you need smart people. And smart people know the collaboration is a key. It is, you can still have people who want to learn everything, want to have all of the knowledge, and this is wonderful. But most of the time, the groundbreaking findings are coming from people not directly in the field, but from the time that people from different fields collaborate, share ideas, and they find something interesting that can work for both of them. So I would say these research, any kind of like multidisciplinary research, especially when you're combining AI with cancer research or any healthcare kind of application, it's very important to have that mentality, have that collaboration. And these like people with different, from different disciplines, with different expertise, when they learn how to communicate, when they learn how to share idea, when they're open to the communication and collaboration, then lots of wonderful things are happening. And I would say this is one of the privileges that I had being in this group and part of this huge group in Kingston and Queens.
Oh, well, no, that's, well, yes, just thinking about some of the people you mentioned, it sounds like this is a gigantic team and it's always expanding as people learn more and then want to contribute to making improvements or adding different functionalities and modalities to the platform.
Exactly, exactly. But one of the saying that I have when we get a new student is, you may think that computer scientists are like sitting in front of the computer 24/7 coding. I said, when you're in the medical application, you should not be a coder only. You should be a field agent. You should be open to the idea to go to the hospital, interact with different disciplines, even interact with patients when it is accessible, when it's appropriate, to better understand. Because if you know the source of the information, the flow of the information, the people who are using that information, that will give you a way better idea. And then when you want to apply all of the AI knowledge that you're having, you can apply it way better, that that you build a useful product for those end users. So my fellow researcher, be a field agent, not sit in front of the computer. That's also healthier. So.
Yes, it is important to get out of the lab or off of your computer every now and then, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it sounds like you're incredibly busy with the research you're doing right now and with Mass Vision, but I hear that you also stay pretty busy outside of the lab with your family. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you've been up to with your family these days?
Yeah, I'm a full-time dad. Yeah. So. So the mornings are mainly my wife and I working, and then the afternoons are pretty condensed playing with our three-year-old daughter.
Oh my, three-year-old, yeah, that is busy, busy, busy.
Busy, and lots of experience. This is the opportunity for me to learn new things. I'm dancing, I'm singing, I'm learning new musical instrument, I'm painting a lot, I'm playing with Play-Doh. So all of those things that I wanted to find an excuse to do. I have the best excuse and best playmate to do that. So it's very amazing. And for a person who is in the field of AI, because again, this is artificial intelligence, so it is come from actual intelligence. So when you see your kid grow up, when you see your kid learn, all of those things that we learn in the concept of AI, you see that that is actually the real thing. So when we are talking about training a model, when we are talking about how the model reacts with the environment, how the new information is received, how even the order of information that you're providing to a model can make a huge difference. So all of that, I can see that the way that my kid is growing up and learning these new things, I see, this is the same thing that we are using, but this is already in the nature. And this is already coded there. So what we are doing is actually understanding, it should be another way around, to be honest. You should understand that first and then go, so I can implement it here. But, well, the stream of knowledge, and it's so fast-paced that...
And I can only imagine how quickly little ones pick things up and learn things before you even realize that you accidentally taught them. Different things and habits, right? They learn all of those things. And you mentioned you're getting into lots of art and things with your daughter. So what are some art projects you've been up to lately?
Recently we are into like drawing things and then cutting out of the paper and playing stories and having stories. So that's good. But I'm also very interested in art in general. I think more specifically visualizations. I think this is a very good ability, especially as a scientist. I see lots of scientists that have very good idea, but when it comes to communicating it to the audience, they lack the ability to visualize it very well. So, and that's something that I really enjoy doing. So I may spend some time on the idea, on the result, but I make sure to spend lots of time on to how to prepare the figures of my paper. So to get the idea, what would be the best way that you can depict this data? Should I use a plot? Should I use scatter plot? What kind of plot is, should I use images? Should I use, what kind of images would be more appropriate? How to get the information that I want through visuals that make the saying that one image can have, can compress lots of words in it. So how to can do that properly? And that one example that was very interesting experience for me during the holidays, the New Year holidays, I thought we have mass vision, but we do not have a kind of video teaser for it.
Oh, okay.
Let's have fun with that. So I spent some days and I said, okay, let's have something, let's add music. And I think the product was quite fun. You can go to Mass Vision website and look at it, everyone who is interested. So I think as somebody who has no knowledge of video editing or creating video teasers, that was a very nice experience. So definitely that part I also enjoy. And as a scientist, I think we should have more people paying more attention to that part.
Yeah, it's great to see how some of your interests circle back to your work and how you approach it in these different creative ways. And you come up with new things when you're doing something fun with art and then go, wait a second, I could apply this to Mass Vision, and then come up with a great video to advertise and share the work that you've done already with a broader community.
Well, exactly.
Amun, it has been great chatting with you. Thank you so much for doing the show, and the best of luck with the rest of your research. We'll have to hear how this develops.
Thank you very much, and thanks again for having me.
So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just search Grad Chat. Until next week, this is KM on the FM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.